Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. In this interview, Tony Armstrong, Chief Executive of Living Streets, Britain's leading campaigners on behalf of the pedestrian, discusses how his organisation lobbies for better streets. Can you tell me who you are and what your role is?
I'm Tony Armstrong and I'm the Chief Executive of the charity Living Streets. We're the national charity that campaigns for pedestrians and to create people-friendly public spaces. So we do a lot of work around promoting walking, but also about enabling walking by improving built environments, working a lot with local authorities and communities themselves.
And you're fairly new to this post. What are your plans?
Well, we've got quite ambitious plans, actually. We've just been going through a period of reviewing our strategy, looking at what we want to achieve over the next 5 years. We've got, for example, a network at the moment of local groups in a number of different areas. Our ambition over the next couple of years is to really get wider coverage of those local groups, make sure that we're reaching every part of the UK. We've recently opened an office in Edinburgh, so we've now got a base in Scotland. And last year we opened an office in Newcastle, so we want to become a truly UK-wide organisation that's reaching more places and having more of an impact.
How does one go about lobbying on behalf of pedestrians? Who do you lobby and how do you go about that?
Well, we do work at different levels. We do a lot of work in terms of developing policy, influencing policy with national government, so working with civil servants, engaging with ministers. We also work with the Scottish Government and the other devolved administrations and local authorities as well, because local authorities are becoming more and more important in terms of setting their own priorities for local action. So increasingly you have conversations with senior civil servants in London and they have an attitude of nothing to do with me, Gov, go and talk to the individual local authorities. So that creates a bit of a challenge for fairly small organisations like us, because obviously we have to spread ourselves quite thinly. So we've got a regional coordinator in place in London and we've got one in the North East. It means we can develop relationships with local authorities on a much more meaningful level, so we can have a bit more success in getting them to do things which are more helpful for pedestrians and improve the local environment.
I can't say that I feel genuinely respected by the people who plan our towns and cities. Where do we stand, pedestrians? Are we about to see a glorious new day, or is it back to the same old trudge?
Well, we're quite optimistic. We like to have a challenge and think that we're going to achieve lots. And I think actually lots of the indicators around are positive, because if you look at the policy documents that have come out of government, Manual for Streets is the classic one at the moment, which really sets out a new principle where pedestrians come first when designing new streets and new neighbourhoods, which is really, really important. If you look at different policy and programmes and strategies coming out of government, you know, not necessarily all joined up, but coming out, the new obesity strategy and the work that the Department for Communities and Local Government is doing on the green spaces and public realm, all of that is really positive in terms of the policy agenda. Where we think there's a huge challenge is turning all of that rhetoric and good policy into action on the ground. We can see some really good examples of good practice from local councils doing work with local communities, some of which we've been involved in, some of which is led by other organisations, but it's not really universal. So pockets of good practice, but still quite a lot of bad practice or failure to act in a number of areas too.
Where do you feel the most can be gained in creating a public realm that attracts people to walk more?
Well, our focus really is on kind of everyday environments. Although we've been involved in things like improving high streets and improving town centres, actually a lot of what we do is working within neighbourhoods, everyday estates. And there's a number of different interconnecting agendas in this work, one of which is about how people feel about their local environment. So lots of the regeneration work that's been going on over the past decade or 15 years really starts with the quality of the local environment on people's doorsteps. If you don't sort out the cleanliness, the attractiveness of people's immediate surroundings, then they won't become involved, they won't trust the local authority. So we think that's a core first step of any regeneration or community engagement process. It's also about looking at the connectivity of different places, so not only the quality of a particular neighbourhood, but also making sure that there are safe and pleasant routes to and from particular places. So one of the projects we run is called Fitter for Walking, and we're actually looking at the desire lines, if you like, between certain destinations and residential areas and trying to make improvements to those walking routes and also to promote walking as a beneficial choice as well. Because a big thing that's a core principle for us is really looking at the interaction between promoting walking and extolling the benefits and giving people information, as well as making the environment so attractive for walking that people don't realise that they're making a conscious choice to do it. It's just the obvious thing for people to do. So there's work we can do in particular neighbourhoods, in town centres, and also in the routes between those two as well.
When you say this is work that you can do, you're not a delivery agent, you're not actually going to change the infrastructure yourself, so it's working with local authorities.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everything we do is in partnership. We're not about digging up the roads ourselves and doing big infrastructure projects. We make recommendations, we encourage people to take up these options. But it's quite promising that lots of local authorities are engaged with organisations like us because they feel the need to do something and they want to have some help in getting the local and communities involved, and also to just hold a mirror up to what they're doing so they can get a better outcome.
And so are you acting there partly as sort of like designers of the built environment?
We're really a catalyst for change. So we come in there and we act as the glue really that brings together the professionals, the engineers, the planners with the local residents. So work we do, for example, through our community street audits, we get all these people together, we walk around the streets with clipboards and point out what people feel about a particular place. We don't necessarily come in with master plans and any of those urban design elements. That's the next stage, really. And although we work with some local authorities to help them through that process, we're not a specialist urban design consultancy. We're more about enabling change and promoting change.
Do you feel that pedestrians are getting a fair share of street life?
Well, it's mixed, I think, is the answer. Probably no, overall. As I said, the policy is going that way, but it's really that mix, that divide between policy and practice. I think there's lots of conflicting policy agendas around as well. If you were able to look at all those things together, you'd be able to think, well, actually, how does it feel for pedestrians walking along these roads? You should have an integrated approach to all of these different elements. At the moment, we're still too focused, I think, on the need of traffic running smoothly to the exclusion of all other considerations. And whilst we as an organisation are not anti-car or anti-motorist, we think that car travel is an important part of the transport mix. We think we haven't got the balance right in terms of getting traffic to move smoothly, but within the context of all modes of transport being able to share the space. And I think that, we've seen in London, particularly because of the medieval road layout, there are quite a lot of areas where there's now a real scarcity of space. So you're seeing pedestrians and cyclists come to blows with cars also not having a great time of it because they're travelling very stop-start, it is very, very congested. What we actually think is that there has to be a better way where you can get traffic running more smoothly, but also give more space to pedestrians and to cyclists so that people will actually want to get out of the car.
Okay, so now you're not only urban designers, but you're now transport planners as well.
Our agenda is huge, actually. It's a challenge for us organisationally.
Because you're also going to say you're public health leaders as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And getting people involved in their local communities. I mean, all of that is part of our agenda, which is why it's a challenge for us, because we want to focus on some things and do them well, and we are a fairly small organisation. But there are advantages to having such a broad agenda and such a broad reach, because we can show that this agenda is important to climate change, to congestion, to community cohesion, lots of agendas. But some of the solutions are actually the same for all of those different challenges, but they're not necessarily seen as the same. So, approaching from a public health point of view, approaching transport planning and the built environment is not necessarily the top of public health people's agendas, but we think it should be. But it's the same activity that we need to be doing on the ground to support that, to support better transport, to support people being involved in their local communities.
Right now we're economic downturn, all sorts of large infrastructure initiatives that might have benefited pedestrians are being either scrapped or mothballed. Do you think that's an issue at the moment, or the infrastructure for pedestrians will be maintained, the investment in that will be increased?
Yeah, I do think it's difficult to say right now actually what the impact will be. Talking to some urban design consultancies, they're having a little bit of a worrying time at the moment in terms of big infrastructure projects, but I think most of those are private sector led. So people are tending to be a bit more cautious. There's no current sign of local authorities, actually, the work that they're doing, dropping off. And indeed, you know, the work we do with local authorities has been doing really well so far in this financial year. So there are lots of things that local authorities will have to do over the next couple of years, and they've got money to do it in the settlements that have already been agreed. So to some extent, a lot of the investment is safe. Local authorities are not going to switch all of their funding to do other things because they've already agreed their priorities with the government. So where you might have some issues is the drop-off in what private sector development is doing. I think our agenda is really resonant, actually, in a time of economic difficulty. I mean, we've been trying to push the arguments around greater pedestrianisation, our town centres, making sure that we've got good walking links to high streets and small town centres as well, because where you've got greater pedestrianisation, there's shops and services, you have greater footfall, and actually businesses and local people tend to like it. And just last week in Oxford Street in London, we were doing a stall at the VIP day, the very important pedestrians day, where they close off the streets to all traffic. And we did a survey and 92% of people said they wished it was like that every day. And the local businesses support the pedestrianisation as well. The only problem is what to do with the buses that go around there. And Transport for London is a bit nervous about it. But things like Oxford Street, you know, things like Buchanan Street, Socky Hill Street in Glasgow show what can be done actually with pedestrianisation of high streets. And I think that it's something that's a no-brainer for us. We just think that we should be supporting local shops during a difficult economic circumstances.
Is there genuine cross-government concern for walking?
Yeah, I think there is greater focus on walking from different departments. We deal with lots of different departments. You know, the agenda's so big and we have to appeal to different people in slightly different ways. But the Department for Transport is very interested in walking, particularly in terms of walking to school. And we run the National Walk to School campaign, so we obviously have a strong relationship with them on that. I think there's still some work to do to persuade them that walking should not just be seen as a minority interest, which odd people do. It's actually something that's the fabric on which all other modes of transport rest. You know, you don't move from train to tube without walking. And the amount of investment that the Department of Transport put into walking is absolutely pitiful. It's absolutely terrible compared to some of the major other investment that goes into trains and roads. Department of Health is definitely more interested in walking over the past couple of years, and they are actually funding walking initiatives now, which either working in partnership with the Department of Transport or actually just funding them because they think it's good in themselves, what the Department of Health have been doing. And the Department for Communities and Local Government are more interested in, you know, the physical infrastructure of the local environment, but they absolutely get how that impacts on public health and transport choices as well. So, you know, it's a slow, iterative process, which is quite frustrating and painful. But actually, I think that there are many other organisations as well out there who've all been talking to the different government departments, and actually we've managed to get them to be more joined up by working with them all individually. So I think we've got, you know, really good progress, but a really long way to go.
Where do you think walking is with the public? Do you really think they care about walking and are going to support their local authorities and those sorts of initiatives? Or do you think they're going to retreat to their cars?
The experience of running the big national campaigns like Walk to School is that people don't like to be preached at. You know, people understand that walking is healthy, that walking is good for the environment, that it's free. You know, they don't need telling that. They might need reminding of particular aspects of it at different points, or particular benefits just spelt out to them a little bit more. But actually, most people understand it. The reason why, certainly in people who drive their kids to school, tends to be about convenience or habits or logistics. You know, for some people, they just can't walk their kids to school because they live too far away. So where people try it for during Walk to School Week or Walk to School Month, then we've got really good feedback from people saying, actually, it's easier than we think. So it's about giving people the right kind of information about walking routes, the distance, the length of time it takes. You know, that we're not very good in this country at giving information about how far particular points are. And if we say a particular destination is 1 mile away on a sign, people will roll their eyes and say, God, that's really far. But actually, if you say it's a good 10-minute walk or 15-minute walk, people will be, oh, that's great. So it's just the way in which we give information. But it's about, you know, encouraging people and enabling people as well. So the right kind of information, right quality routes, safety concerns are being addressed, and you can do things like improve pedestrian sight lines so that people don't feel as if they're going through enclosed areas. You can do things like just make sure that the areas are well maintained and well lit so that people can walk as well. So if you provide the environment where people would like, enjoy walking around, then they just do it.
It's very fine-grained stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very...
I mean, that's part of the problem, I think, with it being so easily swept aside, is that it is... It's what in the detail rather than in the big master plan, isn't it?
Absolutely. The frustrating thing, I suppose, that we're not doing this in much bigger kind of systematic way is that it's so cheap to do lots of these things, actually. It doesn't require huge infrastructure projects. It's actually just things like about thinking a little bit before sticking in utility boxes and road signs, thinking about how the pedestrian flow goes as well as the car flow. Just think about people on foot as you're walking around. And when we do the community street audits, local people with engineers and planners tend not to be violently opposed to each other's views. They all tend to think, oh yeah, this is what it's like when you walk around. But often decisions are made without having done that, walking around and feeling what a place is like beforehand. So every single road sign has a long explanation as to why it's been put up there, which in the first glance may appear completely sensible. But actually, if you look at the whole entirety of the road, you've got road signs that are blocking pushchairs and prams from getting past, as well as giving drivers information on a 5 metre basis so that they stop thinking for themselves and actually don't look around what's happening on the street.
Can you tell me something, Tony, about your own personal drivers, about walking, and what makes you want to go out and walk and make the place better for walking?
Well, I come from a family of walkers, really. They're all quite sturdy in my family, so we were dragged up mountains from an early age. So I've always done kind of leisure walking and hill walking, and it's always just been a hobby of mine, actually, just to walk around, wander aimlessly around towns and cities. So my jobs before coming here were all around the built environment and the impact of the built environment on the way people behave. So I worked for a number of years in regeneration and renewal, community involvement. It was a dream job for me, really, this, because it combined what I like to do with some of my professional experience and background as well. So,
okay, can you perhaps recommend some places that we should try out on foot?
My favourite places in the world to go walking are San Francisco and Buenos Aires, but very different cities. One is very flat and very unfriendly, actually, for pedestrians in Buenos Aires, but it's just a great atmosphere in the city, and lots of parks and lots of people walking around. It's really very much a people place, and San Francisco is just really interesting place because of it's so hilly and it's just a amazing scenery, so it's really nice to walk around. Both are quite European cities, actually, even though they're in the Americas. In the UK, I mean, I like walking around London, which is where I live, so around Brick Lane and Spitalfields Market, which is handy because our new office is going to be there and we're moving in a few weeks. So everyone in the organisation will enjoy doing that, I suspect. And over weekend, you know, I still go out with my family to the Peak District and Lake District.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities in London. In this episode, you've heard from Tony Armstrong. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the talkingwalking.net website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities, our graphic artwork was designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music was composed and recorded by Simon Sanders at Easytronic.